Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Richard Goldsworthy, as a Director of Research and Development for the Academic Edge Incorporated, an educational research and development group that's located in Bloomington, Indiana. And in addition to corralling his three rambunctious preteens, I know what that means, Rick has spent the last 15 years shepherding a wide array of federal health behavior and behavior change research projects, ranging from STD prevention to birth defects warnings, suicide awareness to conflict resolution skills. He's especially interested in understanding health-related behaviors and the role educational and informational resources and activities can play in supporting health behavior change. Today he's going to be talking about the prevalence of altruistic prescription medication sharing and its impact on health outcomes, including the patient-provider relationship.
Given time in the audience, I'll probably go a little off script because I'm also a talker. And did you guys get a copy of my particular flyer?
I don't think you did.
I'll go right here at that. Sorry, because I'm gonna hand wave and talk at things. And if you get bored, you can at least look at pictures.
So what I'm going to talk about today is sharing drugs. We've been involved in several projects to look at medication use and abuse. And several years ago, we were doing a project to revamp the warning label for teratogenic pharmaceuticals that can cause birth defects. And during that project, we wondered whether or not people would be able to get their hands on this medication outside of the normal chains where the gatekeeping mechanisms are in place and you see the warnings and you see the instructions and the doctor says, don't take this if you're pregnant, don't take this if you this, that, or the other. And we got wondering about medication sharing. In terms of medication sharing, if you've heard of it at all or thought about it at all, you've probably thought about what's kind of referred to as non-medical or illicit abuse or sharing, diversion of medication. You hear about people selling OxyContin on the street. You might hear about kids partying with drugs. I was beforehand talking about farm parties, PH, farm parties, where kids take their medicines from home, put them in a big bucket at a party, take a handful, and just see what happens. So those things are very sensationalistic. We were interested in something that appears to be far more pervasive in our society, but hasn't been looked at all that carefully. First, in this particular project, I have no disclosures to make there. I don't have a final financial incentive. I just happen to be interested in this topic. So, as I said, they buy it, they sell it, they steal it. That's the traditional way of looking at prescription medication diversion. And there's a fair amount of information out there about this. Very little attention has been paid to altruistic sharing. In this room, everyone in here probably has an experience of somebody coming up to them when they're feeling the sniffles or something else and saying, oh, I have a little leftover medication. Why don't you try this, an allergy medicine or something you happen to have, or have borrowed an antibiotic, or know somebody who's borrowed a sleeping medicine, or you ran out of a drug and you borrowed a friend's because they have the same medication. All of these things, everybody goes, I've done that, not a problem. But it's actually the same type of behavior. It is prescription medication being used out of channel, but nobody looked at it. Everybody's had the experience, but nobody's really looked at it in the past at these particular altruistic sharing situations. Sharing for what people consider a good reason, not for a recreational reason. We took a look. Prior to taking a look, we thought about what could be the consequences of that, because you'd say, okay, well, so what? I'm going to come back and probably say so what again, but so what? And so if you think about the normal illicit use and abuse, you have all the personal and societal consequences. That's why we go, oh my God. That's why we look at the media report of the guy who broke into the pharmacy and stole the OxyContin and say, geez, I would never do that. So those tie into there and you have abuse and addiction and they factor in. However, if you're just borrowing and doing other things, you also lose the warnings, you lose the instructions, and you lose all the hazard mitigation practices that are in place to protect you and other people from harmful effects or incorrect usage of medication. Reduces likelihood of compliance, and we got thinking about it, what else could it do? It can reduce care seeking, I may not go see a doctor at all, it can delay my care. I take something instead of going to see a doctor in the first place, and then I end up back to the doctor later on. It may, as a systemic societal issue, increase antibiotic resistance, because if you've given me some of your leftover antibiotics and I take some of your leftover antibiotics, both of us have not completed a full course of antibiotics, which may be even worse than when the doctor says to you, you know, you're not really supposed to have an antibiotic for this, but I'll give it to you anyway because you're really whining about it, which we already recognize as a problem. And finally, it has an increased risk of side effects. If you're just handed a drug off the street by your mother-in-law or somebody else who says, you know, I see that you have the sniffles, here's a high power allergy medicine, you don't have to go, to the pharmacy, you can have mine. You can increase your risk of side effects, but nobody had looked. So we had taken and sort of spun this early in a paper in AJPH last year about, you know, these issues may be out there, but nobody had looked. So we looked. What you don't know can hurt us. I'm going to skip a few things. Since we don't know these things, we decided we'd stick it into one of our studies. From May to June of last year, we conducted individual interviews in 11 different locations. I will admit they are mostly urban, some suburban. There are very little in the way of rural. It includes LA, includes Philadelphia. 2,773 people, little more than 250 people per 11 locations. The ages were, a reporter asked me this yesterday, and I can't remember the exact numbers because I failed to bring my paper, but I believe the ages are 14 to 44. We were really kind of interested in women of childbearing age, but we got women and men. Rough mix of female. We conducted some of the things in English and Spanish. 20% were in Spanish about, so we got a mix of the Hispanic population as well. So it's a pretty well, diverse sample that we were looking at. Individual interview sessions, people walked up to people outside of public clinics, outside of health departments, outside in the mall, in public parks, and just asked them, do you have time to complete a survey? So that's what I mean when I say a one-on-one approach interview. And it was a lengthy interview about their medication-sharing behaviors. We tried to frame it in a way that didn't stigmatize that behavior, by the way, which a lot of previous studies do. They'll say, something's always in there that makes it feel like, you know, the thing you do wrong. And all we were trying to get out is, you have prescription medications, you may give them away or you may borrow them, and we're interested in when that happens and why you do it. So we asked them whether they had borrowed prescription medication and also whether they had loaned them. I'm going to focus principally on borrowed when I hit the results slide. Loaning is about parallel as you look at it. We also asked them to try to get at some of the consequences. The types of prescription meds they borrowed, just for curiosity. Whether they provided or received written or verbal warnings. Did someone tell you what you should do with it, or did they provide you the actual warning? We expected, no, of course not, they wouldn't. Whether they had borrowed the medicine specifically instead of going to visit a healthcare provider. We asked them a series of questions about why they borrow and share, but I'm not going to report those today, they're pretty complex. And then whether they eventually went to the provider nonetheless, i.e. didn't work, and whether they told the provider about the borrowing and the side effects question. So first, 1 in 5. Of the 2,773 people, 594 had borrowed some sort of medication, admitted to borrowing some sort of medication, which is a pretty big number given the pro-social bias of maybe not, response bias of maybe not telling us that they had done so. I'll come back to that. And then the big three that they were borrowing were still pain meds in a non-illicit way because of the way we framed the question, allergy medicines, which is not terribly surprising if you think about things, and mood medications. Antibiotics. And then the mood medications, one of the other abusable categories, was fourth in acne and birth control. It's an interesting little story about the birth control pills. If I get a chance, I'll come back to that. She'd think, why would being... tell you. Why would borrowing a birth control pill be a problem? Well, because a friend of mine who happens to run an STD clinic was counseling somebody who was pregnant. She couldn't understand why she was pregnant because she religiously took her pill every time. She took it every time. And he investigated a little further, and it turned out she was taking the pill, which she borrowed from an aunt, much like she would a condom, each and every time, right before she had sex. And so what could go wrong with, hey, this was a new one for me, what could go wrong when you borrow or share prescription drugs? Could get pregnant. Hadn't been on my list until I was talking to him yesterday about some other things. So the key thing here is basically, you know, people are sharing. And they're sharing a lot of different meds, and they are sharing the one that could impact antibiotic resistance and the other two. I have some issues with, you know, allergy medicines. I kind of fall with the and, but, you know, it is a prescription nonetheless. You're not, it is technically illegal, DOJ, to share it, but people don't think about it that way. So, oops, the one surprising thing to me, 50% of sharers, basically, we'll say 45, said that they've been given printed instructions. I'm like, oh, come on. That's the result. My guess is that unlike the actual number of how many people share, this one's vastly overestimated, because once we ask them whether or not they share, now we ask them, did you get your warnings? They're like, oh, I should have gotten it. Sure, yeah, I got warnings. And did they tell you about it? Oh, yeah, absolutely they told me what I should do with it. But nonetheless, you know, maybe people are getting them. My experience is people I actually talk to who participate in it, and the few subjects I post, I interviewed after the study, said, I didn't get anything. But have you ever borrowed rather than visit a provider? That's the big deal. 3 out of 4, that's why they did it. It's convenience. We have a lot of other data. Some of it falls into cost and other things when it comes to like really teasing out why. But the main thing is, I don't want to go to the provider. Even if they have a prescription and it's a hassle factor and somebody has it available, same reason. Convenience. Cost is for a small sample of the subsection of the population, cost is an issue. There are some people who will share meds because they can't afford it. They'll take their meds and split it with somebody else. They get like half the dose each. Which is a problem, but we haven't focused on that closely yet. But that's something that, especially if we start, I bet it's going to show up even more and more if we broaden out. I mean, 44 was our break, and we saw that even with people who are 44. I think with the older population, that we'd see it a lot more. Did they end up going to the healthcare provider nonetheless? Yes, 1 in 3. 1 in 3 of the folks who did it. So for 1 in 3 of the people who borrowed medication, it didn't work. So what's that mean? It delayed their care. So, you know, so what? Well, it might not be a big deal, but it might be that little bit of a window where somebody who had an STD now has spread it to somebody else because they thought they were cured, or somebody who had an underlying condition has gotten worse because they didn't go to the doctor when they first recognized the possibility. It also means that 2 out of 3 people ended up not going to the doctor nonetheless. On one side, you might say, fabulous, the healthcare system's expensive enough, those people didn't need to go in it, they had a placebo. But again, it might be that 6 months down the road, let's imagine a college student who's got a little problem with down under, and he says to himself, it hurts a little, but my buddy had the same sort of hurt a while back. He took antibiotics. My other buddy in this close-knit community has a dental dot and dad who got me the antibiotics. I take it, it went away. Most course of STIs, they will go away. 6 months later, 9 months later, comes back with a vengeance. He turns out he goes to the doctor. He's got herpes. He spread it to 3 other people in the interim. Not an unlikely situation. So those two out of three who went to the doc and who didn't go to the doc after borrowing may not have solved their problem. Finally, something really surprising to me, although we have to really dig into the data a little more, is that 1 out of 4 borrowers, 25%, reported a side effect. They borrowed some medicine and they had some sort of side effect. There's some variation in the types of side effects and so on and so forth, but still, that surprises me that you would think about people just borrowing medicine off the street, 1 out of 4 would actually have a side effect. And again, I'm just talking about goodness of your heart, had some problem, borrowed some sort of medication, 1 out of 4 people say, yeah, I had some sort of side effect. So summary is basically what I just said. I'm not going to go over it too much. That we have 1 out of 5 people in our population willing to admit to sharing regular prescription medications, despite it being a technically illegal activity. And they don't think about it that way. If I was talking beforehand that if I asked anyone here, you know, would you go buy OxyContin on the street, you'd probably say no unless you're a thrill seeker or really in need and addicted. But if I say, you know, if you were at a lake, with a bunch of relatives and you got all stopped up and you knew it was just allergies and your relative said, you know, I have some allergy medicine. You don't have to go 20 miles away to get the thing. Would you use that medication? And most people would say, well, yeah, sure, I'll try that. But it's a continuum. And we have to think more about that and the impacts on our health. The prescription medication types most likely to be borrowed again were the pain meds, the allergy meds, and the antibiotics. Only two of those are the abusable meds that people mostly look at to date. They don't receive, even though the numbers were higher than I expect, they don't receive the warnings in many of the cases, or the instructions, which is a problem. 75% do it to avoid a doctor, so they don't want to go to the docs, so maybe we can work with that. And the side effects issues. Implications, a lot of people are borrowing for good reasons. I'm going to skip this. There are some really thorny issues here, though. Unlike some other behaviors, is there such a thing as good sharing? People always ask me when I talk about this, what would you do about it? Well, I don't know, because we can't just say no. And we can't just say no because people will ignore us. It's like, you know, you don't ever share medication. You're out of your medication, you know your buddy has the exact same medication, don't do it. No, that would be horrible. People will ignore you and it diffuses your message. So really, is there such a thing as good sharing, and when can it be tolerated if not endorsed? What are the actual consequences of sharing of various types? What's the role of drug cost, which nobody's looked at in good intentional sharing? So again, when, if ever, is it okay to share? And is it possible at all to create some sort of risk hierarchy that public health would be happy with? So I'd say deterring altruistic sharing is maybe more difficult than deterring recreational sharing, because just say no to what? I got 1 minute, and that's all I needed. Altruistic prescription medication sharing, meaning loaning and borrowing, is prevalent here in the U.S., and it deserves far greater attention than it's received to date. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.